You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. And for listeners who just joined us, we are going to be having a bit of a roundtable discussion this morning. We're going to be talking about the AUKUS announcement. And most of you might have heard about an agreement, this agreement the Australian government made on March 13th, just a few days ago, when they announced their decision to spend $368 billion to acquire and develop nuclear-powered submarines for Australia. And we're going to be discussing our response to this. So we've got our 3CR presented Jacob Andrewartha. Jacob's also a national convener of Socialist Alliance, so he's going to be sharing some thoughts with us. With the Socialist Alliance perspective. And we also have Sue Bolton, who's a Marybeck councillor and also a member of Socialist Alliance, and me as well, who's also a member of Socialist Alliance. So, yeah, good to have you as well, Sue, on the program to discuss this. And I guess just to start off, you know, we are all socialist activists here. And so, you know, we probably should start off by giving, you know, our perspective on this latest AUKUS announcement to make nuclear submarines that are worth billions, hundreds of billions of dollars. Jacob, did you just want to offer some, you know, what your perspective is?
Yeah, so I guess my kind of initial response to this announcement is I think this is, this does represent, I think, a very kind of dangerous development. And I think there's a lot of reasons to. I think as socialists, we should absolutely be opposed to any kind of form of kind of militarism. We should actually be opposed to kind of any sort of sense of making any of any sort of capitalist government making preparations for war. Essentially, the government is spending, you know, over $368 billion for what is essentially, while we're living in, I guess, in a cost of living crisis, a climate crisis, you know, there's all these sort of immediate sort of issues that are actually, in a sense, endangering, you know, ordinary people's sort of lives. But of course, what, but the priorities of the government, in a sense, is, you know, committing to building and maintaining nuclear powered submarines. And in fact, probably another element as well to note about it is basically, I think it also demonstrates, this announcement also demonstrates that this sort of drive to war and militarism actually is, in a sense, it's a bipartisan policy, because this AUKUS sort of, the AUKUS sort of alliance was actually started under the Morrison government. And what Albanese has essentially basically said was the Albanese government has basically singled in this announcement is basically, we're basically committed to implementing the same kind of militaristic kind of policy as our predecessor. And I think that is quite outrageous in, I guess, a lot of ways.
Sue, do you have...
Well, I think from a socialist point of view, you actually have to oppose any kind of imperialist war. Working class people are the only people who suffer out of war. You know, the rich, you know, usually manage to get away from it. The people who profit out of it is the military industrial complex. And unfortunately, Australian governments have been the only sort of manufacturing they're supporting is military manufacturing by weapons manufacturers, especially Israeli weapons manufacturers, but other manufacturing, military manufacturing as well. This makes the world a dangerous place, and the so-called threat of China is a totally manufactured threat. I mean, China is an economic competitor to the United States. That's why the US is wanting to, is creating this war drive against China. All these scary stories being promoted about China, but really, if China actually had submarines wandering around the US coast, would the United States sit and let that happen? They would not. They would be going absolutely ballistic about that. But also another element of this is by Australia being part of this AUKUS agreement and buying these nuclear subs, the United States is successfully managing to persuade its allies to share the cost of its military war drive. So actually, in a sense, it's outsourcing some of the expense of its military war drive onto Australia. And Australia, unfortunately, is, you know, because of, you know, Australian imperialism's alliance with US imperialism, is totally prepared to, you know, help pay for the US war drive and give it the look of breadth. But there are some governments, like the Indonesian government, that's saying that these nuclear subs are not just nuclear subs wandering around. They're for a war-fighting capacity, and they're threatening to block these nuclear subs from travelling through their waters. And Malaysia has also made some criticism of this AUKUS subs announcement. So, but I think all socialists really need to support and rebuild the anti-war movement in Australia. This is really important. In the 1980s, we had a really big anti-war movement that fought for no US bases, no US warships, and no uranium mining. And really, that's really what we should be fighting for again. We're being drawn much more intimately into the US war machine through this announcement.
Well, actually, you mentioned building the anti-war movement, and, you know, understandably, it has actually weakened over the last few decades. But we were just talking before about how there might have been an opening created for to build the anti-war movement, and maybe I just mention Paul Keating. For younger listeners, he's a former Australian Prime Minister, really right-wing, but he's actually spoken out against the nuclear submarine agreement and described it as the worst mistake the Labor government has made since Billy Hughes supporting conscription. So, just maybe, you know, let us know your thoughts on how this has opened up public debate on the issue. And also, there's been a huge media attack on Paul Keating as well, so we just need to acknowledge that.
Well, I actually think Paul Keating's comments, while he's right-wing Labor and so forth, the fact that someone of his stature and notoriety, etc., has come out scathingly, has punctured the bubble. Because the media's had to report his comments, and he gave a National Press Club speech, etc. Mm. It actually has punctured the lines that the Albanese government has been using for this AUKUS deal, and he's, you know, held no punches. And so the establishment is now attacking him. But I think he has given permission to, by his scathing attack on the government, over this deal, he's basically given permission for other people to come out and oppose the deal. Now, the anti-war movement has been opposing the AUKUS deal all along, but there really hadn't been really any mainstream figures coming out against this deal. Now, I gather there are starting to be some unions coming out. There are starting to be other people coming out. One of the former Labor government ministers, Peter Garrett, has come out against it. Now another former Labor senator, Doug Cameron, has come out against the AUKUS agreement. And basically Keating has also made mention about Labor Party members coming out against this agreement. Now, I don't think there's been that many come out, but there is a branch of the Labor Party in Sydney that's circulating a motion against AUKUS, and I think this is an opening for the anti-war movement to start to get a bit more traction. You know, we actually have to compare the movements in Australia and New Zealand. The New Zealand peace movement actually won the ban of US nuclear warships coming to New Zealand ports. The Australian peace movement never won that in the 80s, and that was partly because we had a Labor government and Labor influence in the movement. But that's why New Zealand isn't part of this AUKUS agreement. That is a result of the successful campaigning of the New Zealand peace movement all those years ago in the 80s.
Jacob, I wanted to get your thoughts on Paul Keating as well. I mean, Sue just mentioned a few people from the Labor Party speaking up, but really there's been no parliamentary debate on this issue. I mean, the ALP have really shown themselves to be completely useless. But yeah, what are your thoughts on the attack on Paul Keating and what he's had to say as well?
I mean, I wouldn't sort of describe the ALP as kind of being useless. In a sense, they're presenting a united position, and this is, in a sense, what they represent. This is the united position that the ALP, in a sense, represent. It does sort of raise questions about, because basically there's often a kind of defence of the ALP kind of put forward, that, you know, there's good people in the ALP and, you know, there's a left in the ALP that is trying to turn things to the left. I mean, now there's been quite a deliberate opening being put up forward by a former Labor Party Prime Minister, and there's sort of nowhere to be seen apart from obviously that one Labor Party branch that Sue has kind of mentioned. But I think a few things to mention. I mean, last week we spoke about the kind of red alert, kind of Sydney Morning Herald front page sort of hysteria around China. And basically the summary of that whole piece was basically trying to build this kind of consensus that we would be at war with China within the next 3 years and that we are not ready. And in fact, Paul Keating has, in a sense, he wasn't just criticizing the AUKUS announcement. He was actually calling out that hysterical kind of footage, coverage around the question of China and this question of building a war drive. Paul Keating basically makes the argument that China does not represent a military threat to Australia and that we should not be entertaining the kind of idea. And I think to put some of Paul Keating's kind of comments in context, I mean, Paul Keating as a prime minister was in a sense attempting to kind of normalize kind of relations with China, in terms of kind of, Australia's role as a capitalist kind of nation. So in a sense, Paul Keating's comments kind of reflect the fact that within the capitalist class, there are obviously divisions on these questions around how we relate to China, because I think China very much, I think how we would understand China as socialists is that China is a rising capitalist power. It doesn't represent, in a sense, a progressive role for workers and that of the oppressed, but it is a rising capitalist power. And overwhelmingly, all the hysteria against China, all this thing about security threat and so on, it's all based on the fact that the United States is, in a sense, it's a dying empire, or it's an empire kind of in decline compared to its sort of glory days. They are basically threatened by the fact that they might be losing hegemony over the global capitalist system. And I think that's the kind of context we have to put in. And then just the other comment I want to make about the Paul Keating stuff is the kind of hysterical kind of attack from the media, I think is actually quite outrageous in a lot of ways, because the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, they like to present themselves as being kind of open sort of democratic debate. You know, they even printed things they even printed an article that was actually critical of the whole Red Alert sort of report. But that's another story. But what it kind of shows to me is like, there clearly has to be, like, even from the perspective of living in a liberal capitalist democracy, there clearly has to be some kind of level of open debate. And Paul Keating, in a sense, as a former prime minister, is putting forward his contribution to this open debate. Yet the media is actually, in a sense, it's completely ideological. It's actually trying to form a consensus on China, and it's pushing it very strongly. And basically, they're trying to make the argument that it cannot be questioned, which I actually think is quite, I think that is quite outrageous in a lot of ways. And, you know, these countries can talk about how authoritarian and anti-democratic China is, which I think it is quite an anti-democratic country. There's a lot of issues with the way China is governed. But it's like, these Western powers, like Australia, actually have no right to talk about democracy if our so-called free media doesn't even allow an open political and democratic debate to be conducted. And in fact, the only thing, the main attack they've sort of made on Paul Keating hasn't even been on the substance of what he's politically been saying. They've tried to kind of create this sort of hysteria that, oh, he's insulted you know, he made insulting comments and they're offensive and he should take them back. But it's like, well, actually engage with the substance of what he actually had to say.
Yeah. And just going back to this actual, the plan itself, you know, the nuclear submarine agreement has been described as representing the single biggest investment in Australia's defence capacity in its entire history. And so you wrote a Facebook post, I think it was, saying that there are 368 billion reasons to oppose AUKUS and the plans for nuclear submarines. So, you know, what do you think that, you know, this billion dollar $365 billion cost reflects about, you know, the priorities of this government, the Albanese government?
Well, I think maybe the first thing we should say is Australia's military spending is all about war. It's not really about defence. In fact, really, Australian soldiers have rarely been involved in defence. Most of the wars going all the way back to Australia sending troops to fight in the Boer War in South Africa have been wars of invasion or Australia's always engaged in war. They've rarely ever, they even sent troops to Sudan around that, you know, late 1800s period. They lobbied for, to colonise Papua New Guinea Australian government has been involved in, you know, the war against the communists in Malaysia with its bases. Like, there have been so many Australian invasions or involvement in wars overseas that a lot of Australians don't even really know about, including the Korean War in the 50s. There's so many, way more than just the Vietnam War. So this is about military offence. It's not about defence of Australia. It's about joining the US's, potential and they, you know, some wings of the ruling class. And the media obviously hope that there will be a war against China, because otherwise why would the Sydney Morning Herald and Age of and Nine Media have printed those stories about Red Alert? Like, that just reminds you of the, you know, the yellow peril that was used in the lead up to the Vietnam War, etc. Like, it's the Red Alert during the Cold War. This is really designed to really scare the pants off people so that people start to think, oh, well, yes, China's a huge threat. So this is about war. It's not about defence. And the media consensus and political consensus leading, you know, around AUKUS that Paul Keating has pricked the bubble on is also what it was like in the lead up to the Iraq War, except there were some more dissident mainstream voices against the Iraq War. But, like, because Liberal and Labor were united, and the same thing happened in the United States, as soon as the announcement was made to invade Iraq, there was a closure of any kind of criticism of the Iraq invasion in the United States. So this is what happens in the lead up to every war, where the ruling class tries to close ranks and unite behind the war drive. And this is why it's so dangerous because they're trying to actually take us to war. And if you look at all the scarifying about, you know, blocking trading routes, et cetera, and Chinese supposed aggression around the Spratly Islands, et cetera. I mean, you know, talk about the rank hypocrisy of Australia blocking East Timor from being able to do oil and gas drilling in the Timor Sea, because Australia basically divided up the Timor Sea between itself and Indonesia when East Timor was under occupation. So Australia has no basis on which to point fingers at China. Australia has operated in exactly the same way against East Timor as they're accusing China of.
I was just going to, the Albanese government is, it does look like it's just justifying this military spending on the basis that it will actually ensure security and safety for Australians, but really it's the opposite. And the real push for the nuclear submarine deal and the AUKUS security pact is actually war and military offence. I just wanted you to maybe comment on that, Jacob.
Well, I just want to go back a bit to the, because I think one sort of issue that has sort of dominated political debate around this $365 billion question is basically how is the government going to pay for it? And I think in a sense, it does reflect the priorities of the Albanese government. I mentioned before, we're in the midst of a cost of living crisis. We obviously have the whole issue of climate change, which Australia is not immune to. In fact, Australia is deliberately making the climate crisis worse. You know, $365 billion could actually be used to address the education crisis. It could be used to address the healthcare crisis. It could also be used to towards investing in renewable energy. In fact, beyond zero emissions in 2020 launched its million jobs plan, demonstrating that more than 1.8 billion jobs could be created through undertaking steps to reboot Australia as a low carbon economy. And of course, that's actually at the fraction of the cost, because the jobs plan that they were presenting was actually involved a mix of public investment and private ownership. Private sort of basically incentives for private industry, so to speak. So, and also I think to make just another few comments on those sort of dynamics, we already have Peter Dutton kind of raising kind of questions around how we're going to pay for it, including basically arguing that they would support cuts to pay for it, to NDIS to pay for it. So in a sense, the whole budget actually given the long commitment that this is going to take, because this is like a 30 to 50 years that this submarine will take place. It's actually going to tie the government to a massive amounts of military spending. And that's going to create a context for future governments, to actually make cuts to necessary social services. And I think we absolutely have to be kind of opposed to that. And I think another kind of element to it is, the whole nuclear sort of submarine sort of deal is intense. It's actually driving an arms race in the region. Like, one of the kind of arguments that is sort of being made is, China is investing in military too, so therefore we have to invest in military. So I think it's actually, in a sense, driving up this arms race in the Asia Pacific, actually driving up militarism. And we have to recognize who is that arms race is going to benefit. It's going to benefit the big major sort of arms corporations who are going to make, to use a pun, they're going to basically make a killing off the sales of weapons. And in fact, we're already seeing those same arms companies making a massive profit off Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So I think we have to be kind of very kind of concerned about that. And in terms of, I guess, what's sort of driving this, and I think we possibly might have to conclude this discussion soon because we have time, because there's so much to kind of discuss about this. I think ultimately what's driving this is what I kind of said from the very beginning, which is, I think ultimately, the United States hegemony is feeling threatened, by China's rise as a capitalist power, and they ultimately want to contain them at any cost. And of course, that's the whole basis of the AUKUS alliance. Now, I would probably just make one comment is I don't necessarily think Australia is being dragged into this in a sense. I think Australia is making a deliberate decision to align itself with the United States because it does have something to gain out of it. Although at the same time, I have mentioned before that there obviously are debates among sections of the capitalist class. There are divisions on this question around, because I think there's plenty of capitalists who would just prefer the status quo to remain. They just want to trade with China because they get a massive amount of profits. But then there's also a section of capital that would prefer maybe be eliminated as a competitor.
I maybe just add something there? The fact that they're prepared to spend $368 billion on these subs actually disputes their line that they need to find cost savings in the budget because of the black hole left to Labor in the budget by the Liberal Party. you know, so they've got to go carefully through the budget and they can't, and trying to hose down people's expectations about fixing Medicare, fixing the education crisis, health crisis, housing crisis, so they can do small amounts of things but not really solve these issues, that they can't afford to increase job seeker and pensions to give people a more realistic income. But they're happy to throw away $368 billion. In fact, you could say the $368 billion, it's like, it's as good as, you know, lighting a match and putting it up against $368 billion worth of dollar notes. So
lighting
this is,
people on fire.
Yeah, this is just burning money.
And
this could actually resolve the housing crisis, the health and education crisis, and go as and funding for disability services and aged care, and go a long way towards resolving a lot of climate crisis spending. It could go a long way to contributing to solving aspects of trying to stop climate change from happening or going any further. So, you know, this is actually outrageous that they're prepared to spend $368 billion on these subs.
What do you think a genuine foreign policy based on justice looks like from a Socialist Alliance perspective?
Well, I think the first thing is, I think we have to basically make the argument that, you know, the kind of real security policy for socialists is one that doesn't have war. It is actually peace. Peace is actually the ultimate security policy. And in fact, every government should be committed to demilitarization and committed to any sort of attempts to for peace and not increase kind of military spending. And I think, you know, we also have to note that the existential threat posed by runaway global warming actually means that it's actually crucial for the next 10 years that even within these capitalist states, will actually have to unite to address the entire climate crisis. But also, I think, you know, we have to be committed to campaigning for Australia to actually withdraw completely from AUKUS, ASUS, and the Quad. We have to basically withdraw from all those things. None of those serve the interests of ordinary working people within so-called Australia. It also means we have to be committed to campaign to closing all US bases, and similar to what New Zealand has achieved, banning nuclear ships in Australian ports. I also think we should be completely ripping up the contract to cancelling the plan to purchase nuclear-powered submarines. I mean, the government already did it around the French submarines, if people didn't remember. Like, so it's not like, because basically I think some Labour apologists are sort of trying to make this argument that, oh, well, you know, Labour has to commit to this because this is inheriting what Morrison had already done. But, you mean, the Morrison government had already committed to ripping off an existing contract, which was with the French government for particular submarines back in that time. So the argument that it's impossible to just withdraw from this, I think, is completely misguided. And I think, and I also think we have to, more importantly, I'll conclude on this, we have to stand in solidarity with all people's struggles against imperialism, war and occupation, and we have to basically be committed to building a mass anti-war movement, and, you know, we have to be part of supporting the newly formed anti-AUKUS campaign groups.
Yes, so do you just want to offer some final thoughts on, you know, why it is important to build a mass movement against this and also build the anti-nuclear movement?
Well, it's actually really, really crucial because, really, I mean, it's the old socialist slogan about the international workers of the world. I mean, basically, workers have no interest in firing on other workers. Okay, now firing on other workers through war is very different now because it's in the form of bombs and so forth. But it's, I mean, basically the working class people have no interest in war and fighting each other. And that's one of the reasons why we have to build an anti-war movement and one that's based on international solidarity. And I think the other element of an anti-war movement has to be an anti-nuclear movement as well, because that's the other thing which has been smuggled in, will be smuggled in under this AUKUS agreement with the nuclear subs, is it will introduce a nuclear industry in Australia for the first time. And, you know, while we've got a low-level nuclear reactor for medical isotopes and so forth, which produces low-level radioactive waste, basically what the government will be doing, and they hadn't really told people about this, but it's only suddenly appeared in the media, that they are going to be hunting around for a community that they can bully into accepting high-grade, weapons-grade nuclear waste. And the media has stopped even reporting on the fact that there's a problem with nuclear waste. There's no safe means of disposal of nuclear waste. So it's actually totally irrational that there is this international nuclear industry and that nuclear weapons, nuclear-powered warships and so forth are being used. And the already two states have said, no, we won't be having nuclear waste in our states. That's Western Australia and South Australia. So it means that they're going to be looking around, especially in the Northern Territory, and especially poor working class communities or remote Aboriginal communities are in the firing line in the Northern Territory in particular, I would say, because it's in the populous states, I think they will probably all be saying no to nuclear waste. So there is a need to link up the anti-war element with the anti-nuclear element, because a lot of people have forgotten, you know, because we haven't really had a serious anti-nuclear movement for a long time in Australia. So we actually need to remind people that there's no safe means of storing nuclear waste and rebuild this movement. And there actually is an action happening this Saturday at 1 o'clock at the State Library to start to rebuild the movement against the anti-war movement against this AUKUS deal.
Thanks, Sue. I think unless Jacob had anything more you wanted to add, we'd wrap up the interview there. And if people want to read more about this issue, they can check out the pages of Green Left. You can also become a subscriber for $5 a month. And thanks for being on the show today, Sue and Jacob, for sharing a Socialist Alliance perspective on this issue. I mean, this sub-deal and this escalation for war is the real threat to people's safety right now. And you know, the rising of the cost of living, the climate, the housing crisis, these are the things that we should be worrying about, not China. Just to plug that, the rally tomorrow, it's called A Call for Peace, Truth Not War, Stop AUKUS War Alliance, No Nuclear Submarines. And that's going to be tomorrow, Saturday, the 18th of March, which is also the 20th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq by the US. And we're going to be meeting at the State Library at 1 p.m. We'll go to an announcement.